It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back into the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. Dustin Hawkinsmith and Greg Pickle, we are back talking Penn State, Appalachian State, 45-38 in overtime. A coach's dream come true that you get the win and you get all kinds of opportunities to pick apart film. I think coaches are miserable in nature. They find joy in their misery, and this is one where the stakes are high for every game. So to come out of a week 1-0, but then to get a lot of good experience and a lot of good film, I bet you they're having a field day, Greg, picking apart film this week.
Oh yeah, I would certainly think so. I mean, look, this was a game where Penn State was a 24-point favorite. It was expected to win pretty handily, and it ended up needing desperation, basically, to come out and do so. So there's a lot to pick apart this week if you're Penn State's coaching staff. There's secondary play. There's linebacker play. There's defensive and offensive line issues. You know, with the receivers, I'll tell you what, there were more times than not where Penn State receivers may have well been embodying Mike Gesicki because they didn't block, they didn't want to block, didn't really know how to block. Now, a couple times, and KJ Hamler is one of them, where they sprung blocks down the field, but I just think that it at the end of the day, Penn State's going to need more out of those the receivers in the running game to be successful. So a lot to figure out there for sure. You know, not again, a win's a win. You get in, you get out. App State got $1.2 million for that game, so Penn State paid a hefty price tag to get scared like that in week one. But I was wrong, and James Franklin was right. This App State team was more worthy of respect and more worthy of obviously being a team that could sneak up on you than I thought.
It's funny because I think what happened in 2007 when they beat Michigan, who I think was ranked number five at the time, mm-hmm. It's become part of the program's DNA. It's part of the fabric of who they are. And it's hard to explain what that specific type of tradition means. But clearly, you know, they have built around that personality and that persona, and I think they've gotten kids by doing stuff like that and really scaring the bejesus out of a lot of different programs along the way. They've managed to build, even though they've got new players, new coaching staff, I'm sure new administration, the same personality persists. And that's one of the really beautiful things about tradition in college football is that it has a way of sticking around for a long time and dictating where you're going, you know, what type of kids are attracted to that program. I thought that I think it's just a really interesting case study in building a program and building it around a certain thing, because they continue to do it again and again and again. They are not an ordinary football team, and Penn State learned that for sure. Before we go much further, I wanted to welcome to our Keystone Sports Network team once again, Shotzi's Brats. Whether you're going to a game in Happy Valley or having a cookout at home, Shotzi's Jumbo Brats, they belong on your grill. There's just not a better marriage, I feel like, than football and brats. You can find them online at shotzisbrats.com, or you can check out the gopsurv.com lot to check them out on game day at Penn State. Shotzisbrats.com. And I think, I wanted to ask you a couple questions I feel like people want to ask at this stage of the game, and you don't have to go too long on these, but Zach Thomas, Appalachian State's quarterback, 25 out of 38 for 270 and two touchdowns, was also kind of a force on the ground game as well, scored a rushing touchdown. Is he that good, or does Penn State just have that much further to go when it comes to pass defense?
I would say both are true. I would say that Penn State has an outrageous amount of work. I mean, there were times when guys, and look, he picked apart Penn State's zone, and this is not the first time Brent Pry has been burned by this and refused to get out of it. I mean, at some point, he has head coach aspirations. He needs to evolve and realize that there's times he needs to just go man-to-man. They're recruiting good corners. You know, it's not like they're recruiting 3-2 and one-star guys.
Yeah.
These are high-quality athletes who can run. You know, you spend the offseason talking about how well your secondary can run and match up, and then you just drop them in the zone and just let a guy pick them apart all day long. So I think it was a little bit of both. Some of the throws that Zach Thomas made, though, those were NFL-caliber throws. And no matter where you lined up, what defense you were playing, I don't think it would have made much of a difference because, you know, he was dropping it in the perfect place time and time again.
And then in terms of the linebacker rotation, what do you think is going to evolve here? Who stood out a little bit? What do you think make of Jan Johnson, his play in the middle, which to me, was, it just felt like he was what you should have been expecting. I think all the plays he probably should have made, he made. But then you run the risk of guys who don't move all that well getting exposed in the coverage part of it then too.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I was a little bit, you know, concerned, I guess, going into the season that you might get an effort like the one. Now, Penn State, you know, played a lot of sub packages where they took Jan off the field, brought a defensive back on, and that didn't really work all that well. But, you know, he was okay, but you just assume that someone's going to go by him at some point and snare that job. I thought Cam Brown was their best linebacker. I think there's a legit ceiling there, and that there's a very good chance that he may end the season as Penn State's best linebacker. I thought he was very good on Saturday. The group as a whole was just okay, but he seemed to be in the right place, right time, more often than not.
I would ask the same question about wide receivers, what we know about that rotation of guys and who's really separated. It seems like you can count on Juwan Johnson to do his thing, which is to be – I know he had a rough game. We were talking about this off air. I feel like drops are going to be uncharacteristic of him because it wasn't something that he showed last season. I'm not sure whether he came into this thing feeling more pressure to be the guy or what the situation was. But I don't think you're going to see drops haunt him for the remainder of the season. I also feel like obviously KJ Hamler needs to be on the field. I think he's the guy who brings the big play dynamic that I feel pretty confident in saying that Juwan Johnson will not. But I think the big question with this was, where was DeAndre Tompkins?
Yeah, I mean, between Juwan Johnson not playing his best game by far, I mean, there were a couple that I think the stadium reacted as if they were his fault, and I think they were more Trace's fault, but they each shared a little bit of a role in those incompletions. So I think he'll have much better days. There's no question about it. I mean, but you go back and look at it, and again, Penn State changed its website. It's very hard to use now. So if you're looking for things on there, pack some extra time. But yeah, Tompkins was not on the stat sheet. He just didn't make an impact like we thought he would.
Was he targeted? I couldn't recall if he was or was not targeted at all.
I would have to go back and watch it a third time, but if I watched it live and I watched it again on Sunday, I did not see one go his way. It didn't even feel like he was on the field all that much. Now, look, Penn State's offense is sort of based on the fact that you're going to spread the ball around, but he's one of your better receivers. You would just assume he'd get a catch by default.
Yeah, and I think the whole idea of spreading the ball around is tremendous, but then when you have all these new moving parts, that's when Saturday happens, and it took the better part of, what, three quarters of that game to really find any kind of semblance of a rhythm.
Yes.
And that's the risk that you run when you have new pieces. I do think that's going to clear up over time. Is there a threat here for Brandon Polk or whether it's Justin Shorter or whatever to leave DeAndre Tompkins behind? I feel like it's premature. I think people are probably asking that question. I also think it's worth saying that Deshaun Hamilton's first experience as a slot receiver was not would not blow you away, put it that way. Yeah, and point. then that role evolved and he evolved with it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to freak out at this point, obviously. You know, things will work out the way they're supposed to work out. Penn State will get production out of Tompkins all year long. I feel pretty good about saying that. But, yeah, it was just a weird game one. Penn State rotated so many people out there, offense, defense, special teams. I mean, it was almost unbecoming at a point. It was just like, you know, why do you keep rolling some of these guys out there that aren't your stars? Put your stars in the game. But at the end of the day, we're all worked out in the end.
I think they're trying to figure out who their stars are, Greg. I think that was a plan. This was an they were in evaluation mode.
Yeah.
From through the whole thing, and I don't know whether it's to their credit or almost to their detriment or however you want to put it, but you get this really close call. You got a lot of guys on the field, and I think this Penn State team is uniquely positioned with a bunch of different talent, but not really an identity. What's the identity on either side of the ball? And yeah. I don't think you got any closer to declaring what that identity is or would be. And certainly I think building around Trace McSorley and Miles Sanders I think proved to me that he's worth building around as well. You did get some information there, but they're trying to figure out who they are. And in order to do that with a bunch of young guys, I think you had to throw all of them out there.
Yeah, no doubt. I you know, but there were a couple of times when, you know, again, when Penn State was in some key spots, they've shown in the past the willingness to run young guys out there. And I just don't, you know, like Cam Sullivan Brown's out there when you're trying to turn a tide. I know he's flashed and shown some potential, but to me, that's a series, and I'm never going to be right about this, because the way they do it is, you know, they have everything planned out, and that's the way it goes, and they monitor snap count and all that. But, you know, you're struggling a little bit. You haven't really been able to do much, accomplish much. You know, you need a drive to turn things around, and you don't have your best guys on the field. And, you know, it's just, there's times when it feels like the rotation stuff is just a bit too much, especially defensively, too. You know, great. Okay. So, your defensive linemen are fresh in the fourth quarter. That's fine and well. I don't know. I'm just, this defensive line was really disappointing on Saturday. Sharif Miller and Iter Gross Matos weren't bad, but they certainly had opportunities that slipped through their hands. In one instance, Sharif Miller literally when Zach Thomas scored. So, you know, I just think that there's, I don't know if I'm more concerned about the defensive line or the secondary, quite honestly.
I feel like, I mean, it's always a little bit of both in these situations, right? But I felt the defensive line was more disappointing than the secondary was. I felt like, you know, you need to do more. Like Appalachian State was getting the ball out quick, but a lot of teams are built around getting the ball out quick now, obviously. And I feel like everybody on the staff, Brent Pry and James Franklin, felt like the pass rush was going to be such a big strength. And I felt like it was going to be such a big strength that you can make up for any kind of weakness behind you. If you're not really getting pressure – and I don't know how many times did they dial up pressure without sending an extra body?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It wasn't much.
Right.
So if you can't create that little advantage for yourself, you're going to have a hard time. And I feel like that might change. Maybe the return of Shane Simmons, maybe the return whenever Kevin Givens, whenever both of these returns happen, you're going to beef up both rotations a little bit. But the pass rush just needs to be better, because it felt like Brian Lewerke, it felt like JT Barrett in the fourth quarter.
It felt like every other game in the James Franklin
era. It was pitch and catch, and it can't be that way. And I think everybody from the secondary all the way up to the front into the coaching staff deserves a little bit of blame for that one.
Yeah, I think it's time the defensive line stops getting the pass, quite honestly. We've talked for 4 years now about Sean Spencer, how great he is, how great the rotation is, and all this stuff. Dustin, when they need a pass rush the most, they just simply have not been able to get it. They have the talented enough guys to do it. I don't know what it is. I don't want to draw too many broad conclusions from one game. It's a unit that needs to step up, though, moving forward.
Needs to get better. I think some of the blitzes need to get home a little bit for Penn State defense to really be what they want it to be. All right, Tyler Donahue from Lions 247 is going to join us in just a moment. We're going to ask him about some of the same stuff going back to the App State game. Stick around.
Keystone Kickoff from KeystoneSportsNetwork.com.
It's time to own summer with Labatt Blue. To have a can't-do-this-anywhere-but-Pennsylvania summer, hit the waters with paddles, backflips, cannonballs, and cap things off with a bonfire and Labatt Blue. Soak it in with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue light-loving Pennsylvania cans, celebrating Pennsylvania's summer spots. While supplies last, beer Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change. Which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
Whether you're going to Happy Valley for a football game or having a cookout at home, Shotzi's Jumbo Brats belong on your grill. These awesome brats are made with the finest ingredients using an old-fashioned German recipe and supersized to meet the hungriest tailgaters' needs. Shotzi's Jumbo Brats and football. It just doesn't get any better than that. Get yours at shotzisbrats.com. That's S-C-H-A-T-Z-I-S brats.com.